joining us, and welcome to the official opening session of our convention 2014. We are thrilled to see people arriving this evening, and we hear that they closed the airport a little while ago, so we expect that folks will be making their way here throughout the evening. I want to give a special welcome, and I'm looking for him now, to our colleague Bill Gershon. There you go. And also really express my sense of joy at being able to start our convention in the way that we're starting it this year, with the four of us, with Arnie and Steve and Brad and I together in dialogue, to be able to share with you some of the, exciting is the wrong word, but very important work that we have been doing over the course of the last year, in terms of reaching for better ways to work together, to communicate with each other, to hold up and amplify the success of each other's organizations, and really to establish a collaborative leadership model for the conservative movement. If you are looking for an ineffective way to have a top-down command and control leadership model for a movement, we have found it. We are certain that this is the most ineffective way to do command and control leadership, but we are discovering, to our great joy, that in a time of many different needs, in a movement that brings together many different people, that this leadership model of working together is coming into its own. And so we really inaugurate that, celebrate that, give it for the four of us in public. It's maiden voyage, and we'll take it for a spin around the block and talk to you a little bit about what we've learned. I want just for a minute to quote Rob Cook in speaking about people who move beyond themselves. He says, "There is a person who sings the song of his soul. He finds everything, his complete spiritual satisfaction within his own soul. There is the person who sings the song of a nation. He steps forward from his private soul, which he finds narrow and uncivilized. There is the person whose soul is so broad that it expands beyond the border of Israel. It sings the song of humanity. This song constantly grows broader with the exalted totality of humanity and its glorious image. And there is a person who rises even higher until he unites with all existence, all creatures, and all worlds. And this," he says, "the song of the soul, the song of the nation, the song of humanity, the song of the world, they all mix together with this person at every moment and in all times." And we look in ways that we can work together, not only in the immediate sense of strengthening our movement, but really strengthening the Jewish people and our relationship to God and to Torah and each other for all times. So I want to jump right in, with my colleague's permission, with a few ideas that we'd like to share with you, and a few opening questions. My first question I would like to ask of each of my colleagues is, what do you see as the most important contributions your organization has made over the last several years to the development and future of conservative Judaism? Brett, can I start with you?
Hevra, it's nice to be together. It always is to look out and see so many dear friends and colleagues across now more years than I care to reflect on. When I think about what the Ziegler School has been able to bring to the table, I want to start out by saying we were determined to be part of the table because it's a wonderful table. and we feel great loyalty and love to the Jewish Theological Seminary and the Rabbinical Assembly and United Synagogue, and view ourselves as eager to be part of the team. So thank you for first of all, providing a table to be at. I would single out a couple things that have tried to bring an imprint and a new direction to. We put a lot of effort in our initial years, in addition to bringing in people who might not have considered the rabbinate and people who aren't necessarily brought up through the ranks of our movement, but have come to Judaism with a spiritual hunger and a kind of passion and a willingness to be constructively critical, to make a place where they are at home. And to be able to benefit from their outside-of-the-box thinking. One of the ways we tried to share that was with our Walking With series, a series of online adult education material that's still available at no cost to anyone who wants to download it. Walking with God, Walking with Mitzvot, Walking with History, Walking with the Jewish Calendar. There are a series of them. Everyone up here has participated by writing for them. And they're still available. We've also tried to expand speaking to people the way they are now. So we have a very active podcast presence with hundreds of podcasts on a wide range of Jewish topics. Again, all of this material is available at no cost. We've recently been expanding our Facebook presence to be able to put a kind of Torah of openness and welcome and authenticity out in the world. And, of course, our Parshat HaShavua, which goes out to a couple tens of thousands of subscribers every week as well. Two more things I'll mention. We, this year, launched the Zacharias Frankel College, which will be training conservative and Masorti rabbis for Europe. This is an enormous breakthrough in partnership with the University of Potsdam and with the stalwart work of the leadership of the Rabbinical Assembly, who I particularly want to thank right now. But that also is a sign of the vitality of our movement. And then the last specific I want to mention is that we rethought the Israel year and have used the conservative yeshiva as a center to bring a kind of heartfelt scholarly approach to our form of Judaism and a love of Israel. But the last thing I want to say is bigger than any specific. You know, we at the American Jewish University are the house that David built. Past president of the Rabbinical Assembly, Rabbi David Lieber. And he came out west, a product of his time and his education, and somehow got the idea without any real precedent that a place that doesn't produce mentors who love their students, however high the quality, is missing something. And so he did that. And you all saw Elliot Dorf, who is very much in that spirit, a mentor who is loved. And I think that if Ziegler produces anything, and that's not to say in contrast to any place today, but it is to say it wasn't in existence when David Lieber invented it, and we worked very hard to live up to that model of love and mentorship and real support.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to mention two things. One I'll mention in passing, and then one I'll just spend a little bit more time on. The one that I'll mention in passing that I think is a real contribution to conservative Judaism was United Synagogue's recent biannual convention, in which more than 1,200 people who care about the vital religious center and our movement came together in Baltimore, not so much to celebrate the last 100 years, but really to remind ourselves of the passion, the wisdom, the knowledge, and the know-how of playing an essential role in the current state of Jewish affairs in North America and around the world, but also the ability to pay it forward into the next 100 years. But more than that, when I thought about this question, the contribution that comes to mind most significantly is the Sulan for Emerging Leaders program that we began 3 years ago. The reason for that is that when I started in 2009 and we did the research for the first rendition of United Synagogue's strategic plan, which was essentially a turnaround plan for United Synagogue, what we discovered was that only 9% of our kehilot indicated that they knew who their next president was going to be. And everybody else basically was complaining very loudly about the need for creating a new leadership pipeline. So Sulam for Emerging Leaders was designed specifically to attack that issue. And today, I'm proud to share with you, we have more than 253 kahilot that are involved in one of the Sulam suite of programs, more than 60 that are involved with Sulam for Emerging Leaders, for identifying and nurturing emerging leaders. And out of those 60, our independent evaluation shows that more than 70% of them end up serving on synagogue boards the following year. Now, that was not our intent. We actually thought, 40% would be really fantastic. Our intent was to expand the definition of leadership so that Jews participate in creating opportunities for transcendence, for the power of holiness, not necessarily on the board. That these relationships with senior lay leadership of the congregation, and especially with clergy, with rabbis and or cantors, that they've translated into ongoing commitments to the governance, to think long-term strategically about how to bring the type of change, for example, in tefillah that we heard just a few moments ago from our colleagues, totally blew away our expectations. There are more than 1,200 people involved in those 60 congregations, and 70% of them the following year are working on boards. I think that's a pretty good accomplishment and something that we look forward to expanding and enriching into the future.
Cool.
Thank you all for this chance to talk a little bit about what's been going on at JTS. I think by now it's well known that my contribution as chancellor is to move JTS a little bit from a place that is a center of great learning to a place that remains a center of great learning but brings that learning to bear for the benefit of the Jewish community and Judaism. And a lot of that is directly addressed at conservative Jewish institutions and leaders. So the leadership is the most obvious benefit of the last few years, with Danny Nevin sitting here, our dean. I can proudly say that not only did we get a new curriculum for the rabbinical school adopted, but we've made major changes in that curriculum almost continually since the day that Danny became dean and I became chancellor. In this day and age, we can't not. We all know that we're wrestling with conditions that simply were not the case 10 or 20 years ago. So to train rabbis the way we used to do just does not work. So if we've added a really stiff 400-hour pastoral education requirement, no longer an elective, but a requirement of every rabbinical ordination, that's a mark of how different things are. We changed the cantorial school. So the training at the Davidson School of Education is now pretty much mandatory for every cantorial student. But that's a change in the cantorate that we hope will redound to the benefit of the conservatives. If we change the Israel year continually over the last 5 years, and have just changed it again in a way that will begin this coming September, it's because we recognize that the relationship to Israel has got to be a major part of every Jewish leader's passion as well as knowledge. And we found that the previous programs just weren't serving us well enough, so we've continually changed them. So I'd say the first thing that we're doing that directly impacts conservative Judaism every day is the way we're training rabbis and cantors and educators, the vast majority of them take their places in the ranks of conservative Jewish congregations and organizations. The second change, with Rabbi Julia Andelman sitting here, is that we've carved out a whole new dimension to JTS called the Department of Community Engagement. Let me tell you, you all know as the leaders of institutions, to create something new, given the priority that always goes to existing budgets, is not simple. But we recognize that JTS can't be focused inwards. It's got to be focused outwards. And Julia's department is designed to do precisely that. The community engagement goes beyond conservative Judaism, but let's face it, a lot of it, happily, is going to be involving your synagogues, your schools, conservative institutions. We are here to serve the Jewish people, the vibrant religious center of North American Judaism, and particularly the conservative movement, and we do that in a variety of ways that will directly affect you, primarily through Jewish learning, whether that's online or in person. The other example I want to make immediately with Mitch Cohen here is you all know that JTS founded Ramah. You know that JTS continues to sponsor a lot of Ramah. You know the National Ramah Commission is at JTS, part of JTS, and happily Mitch Cohen and I get to work very closely together. What you don't know is that behind the scenes, we are working and have been working, and barely a week goes by that I don't spend considerable time trying to think of ways to expand Ramah and to make Ramah more of a living presence, not only at JTS, but in the American Jewish community as a whole. Finally, let me just say one more thing, that behind the scenes, in ways that are not visible, a lot is happening that I think we're soon going to be proud of. So I'll just end with this one example, beyond relationships with my three co-panelists up here, which I think are vastly improved over what they were 5 years ago. Let me just say that we believe in the future of congregational schools. And in order to concretize that belief, JTS is putting $500,000 this year and next year, $500,000 in a very tight budget, into a program called REFRAM, which is designed to bring experiential learning big time into congregational schools with the benefit, with the help, of top 5 partner congregations around the United States and Canada. Some of those rabbis, those congregations represented in this room today. We're grateful to all of them. This is not a top-down effort. This is very much a participatory effort. And I believe that methods pioneered in Camp Ramah and elsewhere that have proven themselves can make synagogue schools vital. I also believe that if we don't do this, if we don't change our synagogue schools substantially in the next few years, we will not be able to compete with other programs out there at JCCs and elsewhere that are coming up with all sorts of new things in the nature of education. So these are just several ways in which I think that JTS is directly impacting conservative Judaism, conservative movement, and will do so for many years to come.
I wear two hats on the panel because I'm also representing the Rabbinical Assembly, and very briefly, outwardly, I think the most significant contribution has been for the Jew in the pew, looking out at, over the last 10 to 15 years, a completely revised set of fundamental synagogue texts, the Eitz Chaim Chumash, Machzor Lev Shalem, and Sidur Lev Shalem will be out next year. You've already seen first fruits. And that characteristic, it's not only that they're new, but that they so represent the best of conservative Judaism with its intellectual content and its many paths of access. Two more things briefly. The RA has endeavored in the past couple of years to get resources out to our colleagues every day, if necessary, in a timely way, so that what's happening in the world is something that you have resources, new resources available to you on, and to message strongly, to let the world know that conservative rabbis are alive and kicking, we're in the world, we want to hear from you, we want you to hear from us, and we want to start a conversation. And we think that that's had a powerful impact. Most of all, though, the RA is the only organization in the world whose primary mission is to serve in the lives of conservative rabbis and their families. It's the only thing that we don't share with any other organization, neither in the movement nor in Jewish life nor anywhere. And we're very proud of that. That is very sacred work, to be able to be there putting out a hand towards our colleagues and their families every day. This is a very exciting panel. I feel like we're getting a lot done listening to everybody. I'd like folks to now reach a kind of across the table, and if you could mention briefly at least one success of each of the other organizations represented on the panel that you have observed in the past few years. I'll start on this side. Maybe Arnie, can I begin with you?
Sure. Reaching all the way across the table toward Brad, I would say that Brad, as someone, myself, who began a mitzvah initiative, the mitzvah series, the walking with series, is really something terrific and a model and a way to do high-level learning that reaches people and gets them really involved in Judaism. But the most important thing that I think you do so well that I'd love to see is the rabbis, the graduate. Many of whom I get to meet and teach things like RTI throughout my travels throughout the country. And this is really a tremendous achievement. We are partnering together more in Israel than we have been in a while, and I hope that that extends to the United States. Julie, you mentioned the first. I have been a consumer and cheerleader for the Machzor since before it emerged. I have said publicly and say again, I think it's a historic achievement for the conservative movement and American Judaism, which 50 years, 100 years from now, is going to be recognized as one of the expressions of Judaism in this time, in this place, at its very best. and I have no doubt this Ador is going to be of similar quality. I also have to say I admire the way that you've given a greater public presence through rabbinical assembly and therefore to conservative Judaism out there in the world, that we are really there and no one can doubt that we're there and our voice is heard, and that is really good. I don't know if you all can appreciate what our man Steve has gone through in the last few years. Steve has done political work of a complexity and difficulty and delicacy that is really not to be believed, but certainly should be appreciated by all of us. The United Synagogue that we get to work with today is a very different organization than it was before Steve got there. I don't know how many ulcers you've accumulated in the process, Steve, but we are all better for you undertaking this work with your courage and your vision. I have to say that I don't know if this table could have happened a few years back, but it's a damn good thing that happened today.
So I'm going to start with the Rabbinical Assembly and with Julie in particular to my left. We all know of the work that's been taking place with Israel for issues of religious pluralism in general, and the Kotel in particular. A shout out to our colleague Yisar Hess, who does so much work. But I got to tell you, as someone who has partnered with Julie on several occasions, to be in some really incredibly intense meetings with members of the government and with balancing our needs against the needs of the reform movement and Women of the Wall and with others, it is a sight to see Julie in action in these kinds of meetings, and I don't know if there's anybody who can represent us better than Julie Schoenfeld has been doing in that regard. So certainly the RA as the voice of the conservative rabbinate and the moral voice of conservative Judaism through Julie's leadership in those meetings has been extraordinary. And we should all applaud. In the relationship with Brad, I mean, for one, if it's a personal thing, when I started this conversation, Brad came to see me in Philadelphia and took me out for dinner, and it was just really a great act of kindness that Brad has continued every moment that is possible in our collaborations together. But the notion that that Germany today has a seminary ordaining conservative rabbis to meet the needs of a growing conservative movement, Masorti movement in Europe, is really an extraordinary historic contribution to the Jewish people. I remember all that. And I don't want to repeat, you know, much of what we've heard when Arnie and JTS talks about the contributions of JTS, but I just want to, you know, reiterate and add an exclamation point to the tremendous work that Camp Ramah continues to do as part of JTS and Mitch's work. And we all know, certainly those of us that have been to camp, those of us that have worked at camp, those of us that continue to go to camp. My youngest daughter is 13 years old. This is going to be her 12th summer at camp. We know the power of camp, but the rest of the world seems to be waking up to that as well. And as a result of that acknowledgement, the work of Camp Ramah to expand and enrich the Jewish world in all sorts of different ways is really a win for the conservative movement and for JTS in particular.
I'll go next. Arnie mentioned the rabbinical school curriculum and Davidson School, the cantorial program, and my colleague Rabbi Shira Konigsberg and I were talking this morning, and both agreed that being in the building every day in JTS, rabbinical students, faculty, they are more satisfied, engaged, feel they have the right curriculum, are doing the right training, there is a level of synchronicity in the program that I don't think I've seen before in the time since I first entered rabbinical school. And it has been a process of watching. We're fortunate to get to be in the building and to watch and to really see this developing every day. So I want to really congratulate you on that, Arnie. United Synagogue, in addition to having really modeled a lot of really important things for all of us in its convention this year, you can't actually talk about United Synagogue and its rebirth and its structure without talking about Steve first. Because any of us who has been in leadership, and few of us have had to serve in leadership and be the defenders and champions of an organization that was under as much stress as United Synagogue with its public. And few of us, in my observation, and I talk to a lot of rabbis, actually on a weekly or a daily basis have to respond to so much criticism in the world and so much division about things that came before them and turn them around. And in fact, we are seeing, Steve, that you're doing that and doing it with a smile. And any of us, I think, could only hope, right, that we would have the internal fortitude, right, to continue day in, day out, year in, year out, to keep bringing about this important transition and expressing a lot of ideas about Kehillah and about our movement that make a tremendous amount of sense to all of us. And so we want to thank you and we want to hear more. And it's been very significant, I think, for both of us to have so much opportunity to partner together this year and to appreciate your really great insights and strategies about the many, many things we work on. So call a couple. Brad, it's been a lot of fun to watch the Ziegler School come to scale. And it is very exciting, right? And we mustn't forget that in our lives as conservative rabbis, bringing new ideas and institutions to scale is not just something that was done a generation ago or two generations ago or in some other time. It's things that are happening now. And the school in Germany will be the next iteration of that. And as I'm going to mention tomorrow, our colleagues in Israel, right, build institutions around the country every day, new ones every year. And Ziegler, Brad, for all of us, has also been an opportunity to really see what it means for conservative Judaism to build new institutions. And we should put together these two visions, right, of the rebuilding of that which we've had and the building of new and use that to carry us forward.
So I want to speak from a different place. I know we're here representing agencies, each of us, but I also want to make room in this room for what is personal, and I think, if anything, more important than our institutional boundaries and loyalties. So, paradoxically, of all the people at this table, the one I've known longest is Arnie. And I knew Arnie from back when we were in college and grad school, and he outshone everyone in the room even then. I want to say that as an alumnus of JTS, what pleases me no end is watching the way you and Danny have made JTS a place that's open for real partnership. And the quality of our friendship, Danny, when he first became dean, we took this long walk through the streets of Cambridge at a rabbinical assembly convention. But that friendship has stayed strong, and I know is true for Rabbi Peretz and Rabbi Alexander too. And that's a measure of your leadership. Because it would have been easy to circle the wagons and rely on the greatness of days gone by. And instead, you opened up. And that is reflected in the life of the community every day, and it's reflected in the way all of our graduates get along and truly see each other as colleagues, and it will make for a glorious future. So I want to commend both of you for that significant achievement, and thank you personally for it. Julie, when she became the head of the Rabbinical Assembly, I called her up and I said, the only way this is going to work is we have to assume that we've been best friends for 20 years and rely on our old friendship. So we also took a walk. I seem to be a walking rabbi. We did a walk on the beach, which made her late for her meeting with the colleagues on the West Coast. I apologize to those of you who are waiting for her to show up. But what I have loved is, and again, I certainly agree with all of the previous assessments, but I want to just say something that hasn't been mentioned here. There's a woman on the panel. Have you noticed? And she's a powerhouse. And when she puts her voice out there, it's with all of the strength of being a great Rav. And that's reflected in the leadership of the RA in general. The RA has been the convener for all of us. You know, I don't know about you, but I come to conventions to be with my chevra. And you really are the chevra. And that's the work of the RA. So I love all the new programming, and I certainly love the Matzor, and I love the part of the Siddur I've already seen, and I love watching you speak in Jerusalem or in D.C. All of that is astonishing and great, but let's not forget that the heart of the RA is the Chevroshaft of all of us together and all of what we share with each other, and I want to thank you for keeping that so vibrant and so central. It is true that I was the first to buy Steve a flak jacket. I would have gotten the extra deluxe if I had known what was coming. But still, because I know that were it not for United Synagogue, we'd have to create a new one. Right? There's going to be a group of Jews who don't think that autonomy always trumps and who don't want to just apply the rules the way they used to be applied. And that mushy middle of Jews is going to want to get strength from each other and encourage each other and support each other. So were there not a United Synagogue, and we came very close to there not being a United Synagogue, then we'd have to make up a new one, and I wouldn't be able to invent one as brilliantly as Steve has been doing from within. So here's what I can tell you from my conversations with Steve. I believe that you are going to see in the next decade a new United Synagogue unlike anything you've seen before. And I guess I want to close by saying the fact that we're all on this panel together is a reflection of our shared optimism and our sense that the best days for a robust traditional Judaism that is open and welcome and inclusive, not just in North America, but around the world, we four of us and all of the leaders of this movement are convinced that our best days are yet to be.
So I'm going to ask, before we turn our attention outward to a few questions, I want to ask everybody on the panel, you know, I think that each of us feels very blessed to be here, by which I don't just mean sitting here today, but to be serving the conservative movement in the way that we are privileged to do, and it is a privilege. I think any of us know that any one of a number of other people could also serve in the same shoes, and that we are just very lucky to do this. And we are here today, you know, and someday, God willing, we will leave something better behind us, and others will be here. And so my question for the four of us is to speak personally about what is your greatest aspiration of what you hope you can achieve during your tenure? What's the one thing you really most hope to leave behind?
So it's become abundantly clear that United Synagogue, I think, essentially has two missions. The first is to help establish Kihilot, understand the new paradigm of Jewish identity and the communal structures that are going to be necessary in order to support it and sustain it into the future. That's everything that we call the United Synagogue under Kila, strengthening and transformation. But that's not enough. If we really believe that our Judaism is ideally positioned to claim the vital religious center, to claim a robust, flexible, evolving, sometimes revolutionary Judaism that can transform people's lives through meaning and purpose. Then we have to get out of the confines, so to speak, of movement and start thinking about Jews. And so the one thing, if I could accomplish only one thing into the next decade, which is something that United Synagogue has identified as a priority, has built a business plan for the next 20 years of about $1 million a year, that we're actively seeking resources for, that I'm not going to wait for fundraising, but we're looking at monetizing some of our real estate, which is a fancy way of selling property, the property that we own in New York in particular, is to seed new kihilot, new communities. And there's a variety of ways in which we're gonna hope to try to do this. One is to create an ignition fund, a fund of tens of thousands of dollars for entrepreneurial rabbis and cantors and educators and others to apply for up to $50,000 a year for the first 2 years, and if successful based on metrics and so forth and so on, to be able to receive another $25,000 a year for 2 years, to take a little bit of the risk out of entrepreneurialism, to get our best colleagues out in the field, engaging people in new ways, creating new jobs, but most importantly, engaging Jews in the richness and the beauty of the Judaism that we call conservative. The second element by which we're going to try to do this is working with, you know, our partners at the seminaries and leveraging fourth and fifth year rabbinical students. Perhaps putting them in relationship with established rabbis and communities in key demographic areas and giving them the resources to go out and create a pipeline and to engage Jews, mostly adults in their 20s and 30s. And the third idea that we have on the table is to incentivize those kihilot that have multiple clergy, so that one of their clergy will spend a significant amount of his or her time doing outreach. And tie it into the work that we're doing with leadership, such that the congregations realize that what's in it for them is, quite frankly, what Eddie Feinstein says all the time. That we got to stop building the synagogues of our grandparents' dreams and start building the synagogues of our grandchildren's dreams. It might not have a return on the investment specifically for the synagogue, but the synagogue exists to have a return on investment for the Jewish people. And that, if we can accomplish that, I'll die happy.
Arnie? Hello.
You know, when I came to JTS, I had one dream, and now I have two. The one that's new, which I didn't expect I would focus on so much, is I want to leave behind me a strong institution that's going to be strong 25 years from now. One of the lessons we all, I think, have to take away from events the last few years is the importance of institutions and organizations. We choose, we survive by virtue of our ideas and our commitments, but we also survive by virtue of our institutions. And when you have an institution that's been around for a long time and very venerable, at the same time when all sorts of venerable institutions in American life are going the way of the dinosaur because things are moving too fast for us, you know that you have a responsibility to change this institution in a way that guarantees its future. And so a lot of my waking hours and some of my hours when I wish I were asleep are devoted to solving economic problems, organizational problems, and all sorts of things to keep an institution that has been very strong for the next generation. So right now in the month of May, I'm focused on this year's budget and next year's budget. But in 10 to 12 months of the year, I'm focused on what's going to be at JTS 20 years. And that is something I didn't expect to be part of my job, and now my dreams are to plant that carrot tree in a way that I never understood before I became the head of an institution. But the thing I did understand when I became head of the institution, which is certainly true, is I believe in the power of Torah. I believe that Torah stays vital when we learn it, practice it, and teach it in ways that befit our time and not some time in the past. And I know that great learning is a part of that, but I know that getting that learning out there, getting people to articulate it in new ways and make it practical in new ways, is also part of teaching Torah. And so I believe in leadership, and my dream from day one has been to impact several cohorts of leaders who are going to go out there and teach Torah through word and example. And that's, I think, always going to be the core of JTS's mission and remains so. And if we can help students do that while they're out JTS, and then help you all do that in your continuing work in the field, then I will feel that my time has been enormously well spent.
So what would constitute success 10 years from now? Looking back, when I first showed up for rabbinical school eons ago, I walked through those big metal gates at the front of 3080, and someone came up to me and said, "You're new here. Are you on the left or are you on the right?" And I couldn't help myself. I thought of the scene from The Wizard of Oz. Are you a good witch or are you a bad witch? Pardon me? It was the year before Amy Eilberg studied rabbinics. That's what it meant.
That's what it meant. Okay.
So we have become so politicized that tends to be our first question. Are you on the left or are you on the right? And my dream would be that somehow in the next 10 years, all of us rowing together, that we remember that we are of De Dekutcha Brihu, and that we work for someone who's largely uninterested in denominational boundaries and turf, and that what we are about is a particular cluster of visions of Torah, and that the Torah itself isn't an end in itself. The Torah is a means towards the service of God and the love of humanity. Judaism is our portal into the world. And I think we have an age which is hungry, really starving, for a Torah that speaks about profound things, not trivial things. And a Torah that doesn't lurch to the left or the right to avoid political controversy, and a Torah that addresses deep existential human needs. So my hope is that 10 years from now, we certainly won't have solved that problem, but that we as a movement will remember that our core mission is the service of God through the articulation and the practice of a Torah of love and justice and compassion.
So I think that for the rabbinical assembly, my hope would be, still is, what was the day I agreed to take the position, that our members will really, each and every one of us, come to see this chevra as a primary vehicle for bringing our Torah out into the world, for finding support from one another, and for jointly planting that carrot tree that Arnie described. The Rabbinical Assembly, in some ways, is undergoing, I think, a very big identity transformation. And that is an observation I make, not as to say that I am creating that, I'm seeing that happen. The Rabbinical Assembly, when I started rabbinical school, was still being described as the union of the rabbis. We are not in the age of unions anymore. Often because of structure and time and schedule, RA leadership often tends to come from our ranks of people in the congregations. And so we, when you come to our meetings, will often hear it described like a synagogue, but it's really not a synagogue. right? It's very much something else. It's a chevra of professionals. It's a membership organization, but it's more than a membership organization, because a group of rabbis can't be the Bar Association or the American Medical Association. We stand for something much deeper than that. And so the Rabbinical Assembly, with the changing times, is much more than I think it's obvious on the surface, undergoing a very deep transformation. And I hope that over the course of these coming years, that what will happen is that when our members talk about the Rabbinical Assembly, how they describe it, what they want it to be, and what it means to them, and what it is, will be the same, will be one in the same. And that indeed we will come to be much more than the sum of our parts. And if the conservative rabbinate can do that, what that will mean for the future of world Judaism is, I'm sure you all agree, really beyond our measure or our imagination. You want to go to questions and answers? I'm going to give them one more. One more. What I want to ask is to each of my co-panelists, if you were to look down the road some number of years, what do you see the conservative movement looking like? And you can pick the number of years. Could be 10, could be 50. What do you see when you look ahead for us?
As we move into the future, I hope we will, with that religious vision at our core, make our peace with being a smaller movement. That is to say, we will never, with integrity, be the largest Jewish religious movement again. Right? If we maintain halakha at our core, which indeed I think we must, and if we maintain a robust vision of God not only as the bubala who holds our hands, but also as the one who makes demands, then we will be profoundly out of step with contemporary Western culture across the globe. And this, I think, is all to the good. The world doesn't need yet another yaysayer. So what I would like us to be is awesome. I would like us to be passionate and energetic. I would like those people who are open to our version of Jewish life to come to our institutions and say, this is great, and this meets my needs and the needs of my family. And that it should be something exciting and demanding and that makes us proud, and not something that views outreach as the goal in and of itself. I'm happy to have open doors for anyone who will find our Torah meaningful and impactful and beneficial. But I am not interested in diluting who we are for the sake of those numbers. So I hope that we will be that place in Jewish life for people who want to live holding halakha and the best of contemporary insights together in a single coherent narrative.
So I'm actually always very uncomfortable with this question, because I'm not a prophet, nor the son of a prophet, nor do I desire to be a prophet, although making a prophet every once in a while would be okay. My inclination, in a joking manner, would be, I'd like to see balanced budgets. I agree with Brad, and I'm sure I'm going to agree with Julie and with Arnie. In terms of the overall vision, I think Brad's absolutely right. The measurement of success is no longer how big is the movement. And quite frankly, even the notion of movement, I think, needs to be redefined in many ways. What I want to see is that we... is that we maintain our impact on the Jewish world. Right? So in some ways, you know, the demographic, not in some ways, in a lot of ways, the demographic material that's come out, especially the Pew Report, which focuses on the market share that each segment of the Jewish world has, does us a disservice. Because it's true, if one looks at the overall market share of those who self-identify as conservative, that's shrunk. But if one looks at the whole numbers of people who self-identify as conservative, that hasn't shrunk quite so much. And then if you break it down and you look at the ways in which conservative Jews are impacting the Jewish world, meaning who's leading the Jewish communal organizations, who's supporting Federation, who's giving to Jewish causes, who's going to Israel. You know, 57% of people who self-identify as conservative have been to Israel at least once. That's bigger than the number of Orthodox Jews in the United States. Right? You know, that's an astounding number. Right? So what I want to see is, I do want to see growth. I think if we're not functioning on growth, smart growth, all we're doing is watching the paint chip away. But in addition to growth, I want to see sustainability, I want to see endowments, I want to see us increasing the market share of our own people doing our own programs. And I want to see people who get engaged with conservative Judaism, and no matter what portal they enter our community, I want to see them inspired, and I want to see them impacting the larger Jewish world. Whether it's self-identifying as conservative or self-identifying as just Jewish, I don't care. I think it's about the impact of the Jewish world, and that's a space that we own. And if we want to continue to own it, we have to really think deeply about what it means to be sustainable and viable in our communities into the future.
Arnie, do you want to give us a précis, a little look into what's going to come next, or leave it for the speech that's coming? Because you're going to... Yeah.
Why don't you go third and I'll try to think of something to say that hasn't already been said.
I think that Steve is right, and this is a very positive thing, which is that I believe not only because we've been spending a lot of time talking about it together, but that the four of us have very coherent, sympathetic visions of where this is going. And I think that all of us have spent a lot of time digesting the stories of what's being said about us and about the American Jewish community in particular, as well as the world Jewish community. But it's very important to separate those things out, right? I mean, what's happening in Europe and what's happening in Latin America and what's happening in Israel and North America are quite distinct phenomena. But when we look ahead to the conservative Judaism, and not only do I think that it's aspirational or optimistic for us to say that this kind of boomerang looks like it's headed back our way, I think the numbers actually, in very significant ways, point to that. When you look at the real vitality and depth and intensity, so for example, Steve mentioned the numbers in leadership, 45%. Of leadership, volunteer, and professional in Jewish organizations, according to the Avichai study, are people who were raised as conservative Jews. It's one statistic. Another statistic between the year 2000 and the year 2013, in terms of intermarriage rates, 37% of conservative Jews intermarried. That means 63% in married. It is dramatically off the charts different from what is happening in the rest of the community. When you put that together with the outcomes in those families, that is to say that 96% of the children of those 73% will be raised Jewish by religion, you are looking at a profoundly optimistic demographic headed in our direction, right? And that is also of our own making, that bears tremendous potential for our future. And this, of course, Arnie is the ultimate sociologist, not only of our country, but of our movement. So I will let you speak in more detail about those numbers. But what is really happening and where we can participate, what I want to see about the conservative movement is it becomes a place where conservative Jews, and especially conservative Jewish leaders, speak the truth about ourselves every day. Right, where we send out our own messages of how moving and profound and significant and warm and caring our community is, and our optimism and our gratitude to see that ideas that we didn't come up with, that an approach to Judaism that goes all the way back to the rabbis as our forebears still works. Right? It has worked in every period of history, and it's working now, and that we will not be on the receiving end of messages about ourselves, but we will be the message makers and message bringers of what this is all about.
I didn't have a chance after dinner to say a few more words about this. So let me just say the one thing that Pew Report and similar surveys cannot measure is intensity of feeling. Jews may not spend a lot of time in their Jewish activities, but it's some of the most quality time they have. So the Pew Report can say to you, how many times do you go to synagogue, but it doesn't tell you what it means to you. It says, do you go to a Passover Seder? Yes, no, maybe, but it doesn't tell you anything about your experience at that Seder. And the question is, do you believe in God? Yes, no, maybe. Let's be frank. That's a stupid question. People should be embarrassed for asking a question like that, because we know how complex these matters are and how deeply they reach into the soul. So I think all of us know, especially those of us who make our lives by reading books and teaching books, we know that books is not the end of the world. We know that experiences, those experiences of community and of meaning and of God and of love, those experiences are transforming lives, and they continue to do so. And I think we know that we are offering those experiences to many, many hundreds of thousands of Jews in Europe and Latin America and in Israel and in the United States and in Canada. And this is happening every day, and we have every reason to have the optimism that you've heard expressed by my friends and colleagues here. And I hope you all share it, because one thing we've often lacked in our movement is pride. It really distressed me when I first came to see this at Chancellor of JTS, but we've got to have the pride to stand up for ourselves when people say silly or obnoxious things about us, to call it out on it. And to just say, like, you are wrong, with all due respect. You are wrong. You are missing the boat here. And I think that's going to be an important part of our success in the next few years, is standing up and being proud and trumpeting what we're achieving. Time now for questions, yes?
Yeah, so we have time for a few questions. What I'm going to ask is that people address a question to the entire panel, and those on the panel who wish to answer that particular question will come forward to do so.
Susan Grossman from Columbia, Maryland, and there is a tremendous amount of reason to have pride, and the various programs that you talked about and the initiatives, and you know, kind of turning the corner, which is wonderful. But I just, on the flight here, I got a chance to read the newest edition of Contact, which is what comes out of the Steinhardt Foundation, and it's all about the Pew Study. And the article by Han Perrin is about the conservative movement. And I think he made a really important point that I was really hoping you guys were going to address, and maybe Chancellor Arne is going to do that later, but if not, I'd like all of you to respond to that, which is, how do we articulate, and what efforts are you guys doing as individuals and as our institutions in working together to articulate in cogent, compelling ways the message of conservative Jews? We heard a lot of kind of things thrown out there, and of course we're all selling conservative Judaism all the time. But I think that what I don't see, at least on the outside, and I'm a little more on the inside than a lot of people, is kind of the think tank efforts to create this new messaging. Because the messaging that we've been working on is 19th and 20th century messaging. And this is Hyam's point, is that we need a way to articulate why this is a compelling vision And it's not enough to say, you know, we're the mushy center or we're the vital center, because that's still a definition by negatives. We want to be a definition by positives, and everyone's been dancing around it. So, you know, where's the 10-second soundbite? Where's the 30-second soundbite? Where's the 1-minute version? You know, that's question piece of one. And then the other piece of that is, how do we then frame that in a way that can reach out to all of these Jews that are checking the box and say, I'm proud of being Jewish, but I'm recognizing no religion, right? It's 94, some crazy, amazingly high percentage of pride in Jewish identity, but that doesn't translate necessarily in Jewish organizational affiliation. And what all the organizational programs are critical. You don't have good programs, you can have the greatest idea if you don't have the institution to support it. But we also need the vision to bring them in. And is there a way to also package that? If I would have my wish list added to your program list as a pulpit rabbi, I would say I would really love a movement-wide effort to reach out to our unaffiliated, even / unchurched. We have so many converts out there, unchurched. That's not missionizing, but that has the marketing, slick marketing, and the curriculum tools online that we can use across the movement that can be an effort that we would all draw on to attract people with this little message that I'm asking you to develop for us.
You want to take a couple first? Good. So we'll take a few and then people can respond. Yes?
Hi. Steve Morgan from Houston. Drove all the way up here. I just want to piggyback on what Susan was talking about, because it's something that's been bugging me for a while. You know, Aisha Torah puts out this beautiful, weekly, very glitzy email blast. And it has an article about the Torah portion of the week, and it has something about being single and looking for a mate, or how to deal with children who have problems. I mean, they have a whole series of articles that are really exciting and interesting to people, and they put it out, and then their affiliates, of which they are all over the country now, right, blast them out to the people who make donations to them. If you want to get something with our message on it, and the message is to serve Judaism, we can do this twice as good as them, right? Because we have a much better message to give. And we just have to dress it up and make it look glitzy, whatever, and somebody, like all of you together, can do this. And we'll send it out to our people. We'll send it out to the unaffiliated people we meet. We'll say, let me put you on our email list. And then we could be doing the same thing.
Questions, and then we'll be able to respond to as much of it as possible. Hi.
I'm Rachel Sackett from Congregation Bethel in New London, Connecticut. It's very heartening to see four of the leaders of our movements sit on this panel and say confident, optimistic statements about both their own institutions and about the contributions of one another's institutions. But I guess a piece that I was expecting from the panel and haven't really heard is beyond the friendships and the positive relations that you as individuals are forging amongst yourselves. I, like Chancellor Eisen, I'm a big believer in institutions, and I'm wondering what institutional mechanisms are being put in place to see to it that the resources that each of your institutions commands and the abilities you have to generate solutions are being brought to bear on the needs that are being experienced in each of the other arms of the movement, and how that's being developed in a more sustained and institutional, systematic sort of way.
Mark Levinsky from the Bethel Free Phoenix franchise, and I'm very happy to see you all here. I thank you, Chancellor Eisen, for empowering me to say, no, you're wrong. Not you, but some of the things I'm hearing today, because...
By a show of hands, who's surprised?
It would be so nice if you took those kind of polls about other more important items. But what I'd like to point out is an expression, and I'm going to clean it up. It's whipped cream on mud. And I understand your positions. You're company men and women, and you have to promote, and we have to promote our movements. But I'm in contact with lots of colleagues by phone, by email. Sometimes I heard of Robman too. And on too many occasions, I hear stories from rabbis privately and otherwise. They're horror stories. And just for informational purposes, full disclosure, I am not in placement, nor do I ever want to be in placement again. But periodically, I look at the questionnaires. The D congregations are now B congregations. The C congregations are now A congregations. And they're horror stories. And it frightens me so much when, you know, and I think you're right. We're going to be smaller in many ways. But I don't see that. I don't see that as success. You know, our illustrious president last week wrote about somebody losing that actually won. I don't think we're winning right now. And I think that we need to really dig deep down. And that there are so many things, even beyond programmatically, that we have to grapple with. I'm in a synagogue which is many times larger than it needs to be. But it was one of those huge synagogues that was built in the 60s and 70s. And just keeping that building alive is a challenge when communities move from place to place. So I think that I appreciate the optimism which you have to have. But when I say you're wrong, I respectfully say that I see things going down the tubes very, very fast.
Thank you, Arthur.
For younger colleagues.
Thanks.
For our movement.
Thank you. Thank you. I also just want to say that it's important to hear the questions. We are going to run out of time. So if we could just quickly state the questions, we'll do our best to answer some.
Elliot Gordon, Los Angeles.
Who are you? Who?
Just an observation. The Federation Board of Los Angeles, is the second largest Jewish community in the United States. The Federation Board of Los Angeles has 43 members, 4 rabbis, all 4 of whom are conservative. I'm a past president of Jewish Family Service in Los Angeles, the only rabbi that has ever served on that commission. There are about 55 members of that board, of whom my guess now, I haven't really counted, is about 35 of the 55 are members of conservative congregations. So I'm wondering, and this is Los Angeles, right? I mean, this is not New York. So all your stereotypes notwithstanding, it would be interesting, and I'm not a sociologist, but it would be interesting to see what's happening across the country. If we're talking about the influence of the conservative movement on the general community, it would be just interesting to see whether what I just described to you in Los Angeles is true across the country, and in terms of measuring the kind of influence that we're having.
I'll go quick. Hi, I'm Andy Merrow, and I respect you all deeply, and personally, and for what you do, personally for me and for our institutions. But I also want to say, I think, Arthur, I'm glad that you felt that you could say the negative, but I want to say the positive about how wonderful it is to see the 4 of you together, talking, discussing. So what I would love for you to do is talk a little bit about what some of your joint initiatives are and what you guys talk about when you get together and what you're working on and then what you need from us.
And last question.
Respectfully, I'm just going to say one very quick comment. I'm David Glickman. I'm from Overland Park, Kansas, and one of the roles, I think, of the conservative movement is not only what we do externally, what we do internally, and I just want to say that, as many of you know, there was a shooting in Overland Park at the JCC, and one of the wonderful things the conservative movement does provide is internal support, and the phone calls and emails that I received, my colleague Hazan Talbot Yehuda received, recent graduate from JTS, from Davidson and the Cantorial School, from all 4 institutions up here, and all of my colleagues who are friends, and many of my colleagues who I'm not yet friends with, and so I just want to say thank you, and that's really something that we don't talk about, and that's the internal support that we have. We all have to say sometimes, in order to say yes to X, we have to say no to Y. And I'm wondering, all of our synagogues are shrinking, or many of our synagogues are shrinking, and we've all had to make difficult choices. And I'm wondering, as a movement, institutionally, you aren't the only four institutions. There's also a sisterhood. There's a Federation of Jewish Men's Club. There's the National Ramah Commission. There's a whole panoply of alphabet soups out there, cans and cans of alphabet soups, that all have infrastructure, that all pay rent, that all pay electric bills, and all those dollars are not creating content because it's going for infrastructure, and I'm wondering what type of difficult decisions are going to be made to make us a more unified and leaner movement.
So why don't we, I know that we're supposed to be ending now, we're going to have to clear the room. Why don't I suggest that we just give a minute or a minute and a half to each of the panelists to pick one of the questions and try to address it. And then we look forward to talking to everybody about these issues throughout the next couple of days. They're all very important questions. Steve, do you have one you want to?
Sure. So I'm going to just say, I want to respond to two things that I heard, partly because I remember them. One is on the branding, marketing, and communications issue. Yeah, we have to do a much better job of that. And quite frankly, it comes down to resources, which is related to the last question that I think that David said, is that we are under-resourced as a movement institutionally. Some of that's our own fault, for historical reasons, I shouldn't say our own fault. Some of that is due to historical reasons, but I absolutely am of the mind that it's time for re-engineering of the institutions of our movement. The difficulty, of course, with that is that each of those institutions are independent. So it's not like any one person can actually do it. Quite frankly, you want to know what we need from you? You're the guys that can do it. And what I mean by that is, truthfully, United Synagogue, and I appreciate all the nice things that my colleague said to me, but quite frankly, it was the strength of the congregations coming together, creating a crisis for United Synagogue that created the opportunity for the transformation that we've been talking about. What do we need from you? We need leadership. We need philanthropy. I think that's true for all of us. If we had leadership, if we had philanthropy, if we had your support, we could do tremendous things. It's not only the re-engineering of the movement. Quite frankly, it's if we're really serious about this, and we want to turn the tide, and yes, Arthur, sometimes it sounds like mud or whipped cream on mud. There is going to be a shrinkage. Synagogues are in stress. We are over-invested in real estate and so forth and so on. But there is, as Elliot pointed out, as I said earlier, conservative Jews are the most impactful segment of the Jewish community. We have a lot of resources. If we were to raise our heads in pride and open a sense of looking beyond the individual needs of our communities, but think collectively and drive quality lay people with resources to our institutions, demand that they lead a re-engineering of the movement, it would be done, it would be done quickly, and it would be awesome.
So just very brief. We live in an age in which it is absolutely coherent to not be religious. And that poses a deep threat to us, and that's not going to stop. It's actually a very reasonable thing. You look at the world and you say there can't be a God, and you're done with it. And so having a more compelling minion or a better melody for Shacharit is not going to get you another member from those people. There's good reasons to not be religious. So we can't operate with that as default anymore, and it can't be the default. Second thing I want to say is I don't have any time to try to reinvent history. So we have separate institutions, and they're not going to merge. They're just not. Some may collapse, and then we can recreate something where they used to exist, but they're not going to merge. So I spend a good deal of time talking to the leadership of Women's League and talking to the leadership of the men's clubs and the JEA and other arms to make suggestions for how we could work together better, how we could leverage each other's talents and start working in a cooperative fashion, but they're just not going to go away. So how we can do that, but those questions aren't closed questions either. Is there a demand for a women's organization in an age when women can be members of the rabbinical assembly? It's not self-evident that that's true anymore. So we have to be able to say, what are the needs of today and tomorrow, and then how, given where we're standing now, where do we move from here to better address those needs? The last thing I want to say, Arthur, is I started making a list of communities where there are really vibrant and exciting things happening in conservative institutions. I was just in Arizona speaking at an awesome, amazing conservative synagogue that is booming. I was in one in Chicago that was booming, and one of them was a place without walls, and one of them, let me tell you, Taka had some serious walls. But I hear about shuls in Baltimore and in Dallas and in Seattle and all over the place where there are sparks that are igniting. The last thing I want to say on this subject of working together and a plan, When Eddie chaired that magnificent Machzor into reality, I called him up and I said, you have produced the Machzor that process theology is the theology for in advance of the Machzor being produced. Right? And it's an amazing Machzor. I think part of our task, and it's one of the reasons that I turned to the RA to partnership a book on theology, because we conservative Jews have been mouthing things we don't believe for a long time because we're supposed to believe them. And that drives healthy people away. So what we need to do, I think, is come back to what do we really believe? How do we pull it together? How do we serve well? And the institutional questions will work themselves out through the personal. I really believe that institutions are just collections of people. And yes, we do have to come up with structural solutions, but they are, at this stage of the game, human solutions.
If I may, I want to respond a little bit to Arthur's question, because I think it's a question on the mind of a lot of our colleagues. This is the Rabbinical Assembly Convention. You know, this is not a convention of the broader public. And no one knows better than the five rabbis who work in your office what conservative rabbis are going through. And so to ask of us to be able to grasp fully a lot of the good that is there, and it's there in your synagogue too, Arthur, right? It's there because you make it there, and it's there in your writing, and it's there in your energy, and it's there because of you. So to ask rabbis alone, right, to somehow see beyond what are tremendous, enormous changes in the lives of individuals and their families is not a fair request. And it is not something that we can do on our own. But we do have two choices here, and they're somewhat stark, right? We can either see a lot of these painful transitions that some of our communities are going through and extrapolate from that, you know, damn the torpedoes, that's the way things are going. Or we can extrapolate that together, despite the fact that under a microscope in individual places, demographics and social forces are changing around rabbis in ways that are far greater than any one human being can reasonably be expected to overcome, and say that together, notwithstanding that, we are all going to make sure that your Torah and your vision and what you've worked for every day of your lives and your families have sacrificed so much for will yet go on to triumph for the Jewish people. We are dedicated to that for you, and it makes us no less dedicated to wanting to find ways to help each, and each story is different, to help each rabbi in his or her place figure out how to deal with challenges that are much greater than any one person can address and that are not of their making. But I want to just say that I think it's important that you said what you did, because I think it's in the mind of a lot of people in the room and in the RA, and it needs to be addressed, and it needs for us to be addressed together. So I thank you.
we have to eat, but let me just say in answer to a couple of questions, you should all be assured that behind the scenes we are working on methods of practical cooperation among your organizations. I think you're going to bear fruit. I'm confident they're going to bear fruit. And why don't you invite us back in a few years and we'll report to you on those.
It was a great opening session. Dinner will be in this room shortly.